President Obama says his aim is to strengthen and build ladders of opportunity into the middle class. This hour, how the middle class is changing. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Are you part of the middle class? What's considered the middle class anyway? And how has it been squeezed by this Great Recession? This hour, we want to find out about the middle class in the nation and here in Iowa. We'll talk with an Iowan who fell out of the middle class and has been searching for a safety net. Also with sociologist Kevin Light about where our middle class is headed and what that means for our nation as a whole. Join our discussion after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In last month's State of the Union address, President Obama had this to say about the state of the middle class.
Over more than three decades, even before the Great Recession hit, massive shifts in technology and global competition had eliminated a lot of good middle class jobs and weakened the economic foundations that families depend on. Today, after 4 years of economic growth, corporate profits and stock prices have rarely been higher, and those at the top have never done better. But average wages have barely budged. Inequality has deepened. Upward mobility has stalled. The cold hard fact is that even in the midst of recovery, too many Americans are working more than ever just to get by, let alone to get ahead. And too many still aren't working at all. So our job is to reverse these trends. It won't happen right away, and we won't agree on everything. But what I offer tonight is a set of concrete, practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class.
President Obama last month, are you part of the middle class? Are you struggling to stay a part of the middle class? What is considered the middle class anyway? This hour, we want to find out about the middle class in the nation, also here in Iowa. Where is it being squeezed? How? And what's its future? And what does the future of the middle class say about the future of our nation? Now, in just a moment, we'll find out about this big picture view of what's been happening with the middle class and why it matters. But first, let's zoom in and talk with one Iowan, an Iowan who used to consider herself part of the middle class along with her husband, but no longer does. Jacqueline is in our Iowa City studio from Johnson County. She's 65 years old and has asked us not to use her last name. Hello, Jacqueline.
Hello.
Take me back to when you considered yourself part of the middle class. What was life like? You and your husband had both had jobs?
Yes, we both had jobs. Between the two of us, we were earning a little over $100,000. Our children were comfortable. We didn't live particularly high. We had a nice newish car. We had a modest home. Mm-hmm. We were living on the West Coast, which made it a lot more expensive to live. So two incomes were more necessary. But we were comfortable. Our kids had the things that other children basically had. It was a nice life.
And what year are we talking about?
We're talking about pre-1998.
Okay. A little before 1998. Okay. So a turning point. What happened? When did things, as far as the financial side, start to fall apart?
In 1992, I had been hurt at work in one of those accidents that's ongoing. It's not one big thing. And I ended up having three surgeries on my neck. And it caused me to become permanently disabled because I could no longer do the work that I had been doing. I did get retirement from my company. I did get Social Security. So that kept us pretty okay. My husband was working. He worked for Kodak and he worked for a major newspaper in the Los Angeles area. Kodak started having problems and he was laid off. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we still had the major newspaper. That was his primary job. We were doing okay. It was not getting easy. But as virtual news became bigger and bigger and bigger, that job went away also. And we moved out of Southern California and eventually ended up here in Iowa because we had a really good friend that lived here, and she said that the income, you know, the cost of living was cheaper and the education was pretty good. We had kids that were getting into the junior high, pushing on to high school area.
Mm-hmm. When were you really in – did you reach a point of dire straits where you had to reach out to what, friends, family, or – the government?
We had to reach out to the government, both of our parents and most of our family's dead. I'm an only child. And we had moved to a small river town here, and that just was not working out educationally for our daughter. Mm-hmm. High school was coming up, and we had discovered Iowa City and much more broad cultural base and all of that, so we moved up here. We had believed that we were going to be able to go to work for the U of I. We both had skills that would allow us to do that. We moved up here, got settled, and the crash happened, and the U of I froze all jobs. Mm-hmm. That's when it started getting really bad.
The Great Recession happening at the end of 2008 to the beginning of 2009. What's life like today? How do you make ends meet? How much of a struggle is it to make ends meet?
Periodically, it's a really hard struggle. We had a brand new car a newish car when we came here. Because of a terrible accident, it was destroyed. Didn't know anything about gap insurance. Thought when you had full coverage, your car was covered. Well, it wasn't, and we were upside down some $6,000-$7,000, mm-hmm. and we had no vehicle. Mm-hmm. And my husband was pretty badly hurt in the accident. From there, it's just sort of gone downhill. We got an old car, trying to keep it going. Daughter in high school, you know, wanting to do high school stuff.
Sure.
Not having the money to do high school stuff. She was very gracious about it. And I went and found that I could get housing assistance and I could get food assistance. And I got insurance for the children, of which we have two. My husband didn't have insurance. I did because I was disabled and I had Medicare. Mm-hmm. He got ill, but we couldn't afford to send him anywhere. So that was a problem. Our daughter turned 18, out of school. All of a sudden, she's not a member of the household, and all these people are telling us, well, she has to go to work or you don't qualify for anything. So she finds herself a job in the field that she wants to go into eventually. But that income added to ARCA income also threw us out of food stamps, and she lost her insurance. So it's just been a really difficult situation.
I understand you're back in school at the age of 65.
Yes, I am. I am 40 years clean and sober. And I decided that I was going to go back. And first of all, I thought I'd get my drug and alcohol counseling, which I'm also doing. But my goal is to be a social worker.
Okay. Well, we wish you well on that, and please stay with us. We want to hear a little bit more. Final question, since the medical – it seems the turning point was medical problems that you and your husband had that really was the turning point that led this fall from the middle class. Has the Affordable Care Act, the new health care law, does that mean something new for you, hopeful?
It has already meant something fantastic. Iowa Care is what he got when he got really sick, and they covered one thing, but there were multiple issues, and they wouldn't cover them. Our daughter also, when she turned 19, no longer qualified for Medicaid, and she had issues that they would not cover either. And with the new Affordable Act, it's called Iowa Health and Wellness. My husband has already been able to see two specialists besides seeing a new primary care, and they're taking care of several things. And my daughter's – all of her medical problems are being taken care of now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think overall of the system, the safety net, let's just call it, that you and your husband, your family fell into when this happened to you? Adequate?
No, not in any means, and I see it becoming less adequate. All the money that they just did in the farm bill that they took out, $90 out of most people who are on food stamps or SNAP, it's called now, they're taking $90 away for a month. That's a lot of money. I know people that sometimes are not making it to the end of the month anyway. And when they lose that $90, they're probably not going to make it halfway through the month on food.
Jacqueline, stay with us. We want to have you join our conversation, River to River listeners. What do you think of Jacqueline's story? Is our system adequate? Is it broken? Do you have a similar story? Are you struggling to be stay part of the middle class? Or have you fallen out of the middle class? What or who is to blame? What does the wealth and health of our middle class mean for the future of our nation? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, let's go from an individual study story from Jacqueline and from an Iowan and zoom out to a bigger picture look at what's been happening to the middle class in our nation and our state. John Gallo is with us, lecturer in the Department of Finance at the Tippie College of Business at the University of Iowa. He's also a certified financial planner. John Gallo, welcome to our studio.
Great to be here.
Let's talk about the definition before we get into how it's changing or what it is. But how do we define the middle class?
Well, the median household income today is about $50,000. So if you want to use that statistically, that would kind of give you a benchmark.
A benchmark, and then either side of that, how far does
it go up? Relative to the median, if you're above that, you're doing a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Where do you put the ranges there? It has got a lot of flexibility, so.
Let's talk about the nation as a whole and then Iowa more specifically. What trends do you see concerning the size and well-being of our middle class?
Well, it's going to be more challenging. I don't think that, you know, I'm not here to give you an indication of impending doom by any means, but things are going to be more challenging.
In what ways?
We're an economy that is maturing, and this is something that's gone, you know, other superpowers have gone through historically over time. We're experiencing that economically now, certainly not militarily, but economically, the need for skills, highly valued market skills, is increasing. If you take a look, for example, at the college education right now, if somebody with a household that's headed by somebody with a bachelor's degree is getting about $69,000. Mm-hmm. If you have just a high school degree, it's about $36,000. So there's a large disparity there. Now, that's just college. That doesn't mean that there aren't other skills that are valued. It doesn't have to be a college degree. But the market is needs. It is becoming very sophisticated, and it requires job skills.
So what you're saying that more and more over the past decades, and we have every reason to believe this in the future, that a key to getting into the middle class is higher education.
Higher education, and I would argue that it's a key to at least staying in the middle class.
Mm-hmm. Now, a while ago on this program, we heard from Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under President Clinton, and he's out with a new documentary film, but talking about the squeezing, the shrinking of the middle class. To what extent is the middle class being squeezed under the current economic conditions?
To give you an indication, in 2006, the median income was about $44,000. So we've seen in 23 years that the income has gone up about $6,000.
And you're saying that that's not much in 20 years.
That's exactly right. Now, inflation has gone up about a total of somewhere around 40% during that period. So your living expenses have gone up substantially while your income has been largely compressed.
And if we would compare the middle class with the way high earners in our country, they have in that same time period increase their income a lot more, I would guess.
Yes. Right now, I think the upper 6% own about 33% of all the wealth in this country. So it's become – the disparity has become noticeable.
So let's take Iowa as a subset of the nation. How's Iowa's middle class faring compared to the rest of the country?
It's doing better. The Iowa's average household income right now is $48,000. So if you look at it dollar for dollar, we're doing less. But because the cost of living here is so much lower, it actually is – that equates to – with the cost of living adjustment to about $52,000. Mm-hmm. So it actually improves it.
When we talk about Iowa and the middle class, what parts of Iowa, if we talk about urban and rural, are getting squeezed in the middle class most?
The rural
area.
Yeah. If you take a look, the population of the state is staying pretty constant, but there is a migration from the smaller towns to the larger cities. So if you go to Des Moines or anywhere in the corridor here, Council Bluffs, they seem to be doing quite well. The rural towns, however, are experiencing a lot more disparity than you're going to see in the urban areas of the state.
You mentioned education as increasingly has always been a key to the middle class, but increasingly so in recent decades and on into the future. What about another key to the middle class, or at least an indicator, home ownership? Home ownership, well, that was part of this latest, what we're calling the greatest recession. So how has that developed in relation to the middle class?
Home wealth has been a significant component of the wealth of the typical American consumer for quite a while. During the last decade, middle of 2000s, the home ownership rate got up to about 68% of all households. That was, as it turns out, too high. We're back down to about 66% now, and that while you think 2% doesn't look like much, it's a significant amount of money. Nonetheless, the amount of money or the wealth that's invested in households has gone from about $15 trillion in the United States in 2001. And by 2006, it was down to about $6 trillion. That was before the bubble burst, by the way.
You seem to be talking about like a sweet spot as far as home ownership, 60%, 70%. Why is that important?
There's a huge impact. If you own a home, you obviously have, you've got a greater investment in that property and you put more money into it. There's a huge trickle-down effect economically. You buy, appliances, furniture, things of that nature to keep your house going. You're constantly maintaining it. But there's home ownership is a huge component of the economy.
Let's talk about the government, whether it be at a state or federal level, the influence that government policies, regulations can have on the shape, the characteristics of the middle class. Is that entirely under the control of government policies and legislation or somewhat outside of it?
It's largely outside of it, I think. This is mostly a market-determined factor. The government can make policies that certainly enhance the potential for opportunity. But the creation of the opportunities itself, I believe, comes from the private sector.
Our progressive income tax structure would be a way to help the middle class, right?
Theoretically, yes.
I see some skepticism in your face. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you take a look at the with a percentage of income that the high wage earners, if you want to look at, let's call them the 1%, mm-hmm. what they pay is closer to probably about 14%, where the middle class on average is paying about 28%. So when you call it progressive, which is technically what we have, by the time you're done playing all the games with the taxes, it's not progressive.
Okay.
So tax reform would be one aspect that I think would probably enhance the middle class, but is a very politically charged topic.
You say it's largely market-driven. The government can have some influence on the middle class. So market-driven tells me that because we've been going through an era of globalization, that a lot of these things are outside the control of our borders. What's been happening in the world that has been affecting the middle class here in Iowa?
If you want to go back, the globalization's been a big factor, and you can go back to NAFTA. That was during the Clinton administration early on. And a lot of American companies shipped labor overseas, but that's been a big factor there was wages started to decline, particularly in the manufacturing sector. And that was always an avenue to the middle class for the less educated, the blue collars, if you will. So that has had a huge impact on our manufacturing sector in particular.
So Ross Perot was right with his huge sucking
In retrospect, he was, yes.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the future. You said Iowa's middle class is in relatively good shape. What do you see for the future?
Well, in Iowa or
both. Okay. Iowa and in the nation.
Let's talk about Iowa. We are based on agriculture here. It's a primary economic driver, and we're providing something that people need. So I think that we don't have anything really to worry about. Whether or not that's going to provide substantial growth is another issue, but we don't go through the boom and busts that many of the other economies do because we do provide a staple. And if you take a look back at the housing bust, we didn't experience, as you said, either the upside, the substantial upside or downside of that market. It's been pretty stable. Our unemployment rate's been below average substantially, and we're relative to the rest of the country in pretty good shape.
Of course, Iowa is an agricultural state, but most of us in Iowa do not work directly in agriculture. Does that matter when we talk about the future of the middle class in Iowa?
I can tell you I work for the University of Iowa, and certainly the agricultural sector contributes a lot to the funding of the university. So if you work for the government in this state, yes, it does matter.
Okay, so we have to look at all the ways in which agriculture feeds into other areas of employment.
Absolutely, it does. I mean, the interaction of the various sectors is important, but agriculture is the driving it is the key economic driver in this state.
Mm-hmm. What else do you see in Iowa's future concerning the middle class? Any trends that we haven't mentioned?
Iowa's got a pretty strong financial sector, particularly in Des Moines. Insurance is a very big business, and they're attracting more business here. Quite frankly, I think as time goes on, other areas of the country are becoming aware of the low cost of living here. And I think the state is providing more amenities, and it's going to attract more highly skilled labor. So I see the future as being pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Do we see a reverse of what has been called a brain drain in Iowa, where we educate our young people and they go off to find higher paid jobs in other states?
I'm not seeing that as much with my students now as I did before 2008. Many more of them are staying in the state, and there are opportunities in the larger cities. If there's a brain drain that's being experienced in Iowa, it's in the smaller towns where the students go off to school, get educated, and then they go off somewhere else. It could be for one of the larger cities in Des Moines. It could be out of state.
Hey, John Gallo, lecturer in the Department of Finance at the Tippie College of Business at the University of Iowa, certified financial planner. Thank you for your perspective on our changing middle class, John.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about our middle class, shrinking middle class, as it turns out, not doing as bad as some parts of the country here in Iowa. We want to hear your story this hour. Have you fallen out of the middle class? Are you struggling to stay in the middle class? We've got a couple minutes before we take a break. Let's go to Bill. Bill is calling from Ames. Hi, short of time before our break, Bill, but what's your story? Are you struggling to stay in the middle class?
I'm struggling to stay afloat. I've fallen out of the middle class starting in 2007. When I got laid off by my fourth company in a row and haven't found a permanent job since. I've been consulting since 2007, on and off, more off than on, getting paid really well sometimes and practically nothing others. I've taken a part-time job at a local home improvement store, but that pays, while it pays better than minimum wage and even better than the new federal minimum wage, it's still not enough to live on for a husband, a wife, and two children. My wife's taking a low-paying job with AmeriCorps to try and get back in the workflow. But again, getting hired as a middle-aged MBA is impossible.
Mm-hmm. Bill, what's your plan for the future?
Luckily, the economy is turning around slightly. More people are leaving their jobs, so there are some openings. I continue to do consulting, looking for a permanent job. But the company that hires me will end up having a worker that will stay there many years and work very hard.
Having experienced this, we have about 30 seconds left. Having experienced this, has this changed your thoughts about the middle class and the state of our economy? Your experience?
I think the door has shut on the middle class. It is not the low-paying jobs that the problem. It's the problem that there are no jobs to move up to. Companies have become so efficient and so caring about their quarterly bottom line that they refuse to bring people on. They will work their people harder, and if they don't work up to the staff, they'll lay them off or fire them.
Bill, thank you so much for your personal story and observations from Ames. We're going to take a short break now after talking with Bill in Ames, and we want to invite you to chip in your thoughts about the middle class, where it's headed, how it's being squeezed. Perhaps you're in the part of the middle class that is being squeezed. Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. You can also post a message or a question on Facebook, our Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. When we come back, Kevin Light will be with us, the author of Middle Class Meltdown in America, Causes, Consequences, and Remedies. We hope you'll stay with the conversation. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the state of our middle class. If you remember last month, President Obama said he aimed to strengthen and build ladders of opportunity into the middle class. We're sort of putting our finger on the pulse of the middle class, both in the country and in our state. Find out, talk about how it's changing, where it's been squeezed, what its future is, and what the future of the middle class says about the future of our nation. We've had several people with us. Jacqueline is in our studio in Iowa City, someone who considered herself and her husband, along with her, part of the middle class until a few years ago when medical problems created an unfortunate turning point. They no longer consider themselves part of the middle class and have had to reach out to various services for help. If you'd like to join our conversation, how do you know if you're middle class in your community? Have you fallen out of the middle class? Are you struggling to stay in it? We have in our Facebook page a response from Anthony to the question, how do you know if you're middle class in your community? It's easy, he writes. Does one parent work? Do you own your house? Do your family members have cars? Does your child have debt from going to school? Those answers should be yes, 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 no, according to Anthony. 1-866-780-9100. Jacqueline's still with us, and let me introduce Kevin Light. He is a professor and chair of the Department of Sociology at the University of Iowa, also director of the Iowa Social Science Research Center. Kevin Light, welcome back to our program.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
We want to mention, too, you're the author of Middle Class Meltdown in America, Causes, Consequences, Remedies. I see just out in its second edition.
Yes, this month.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about we heard the big picture from John Gallo, also a couple of narratives here. What do you want to add to the characterization of what's happening to the middle class, what has been happening, I guess, going back to the beginning of the Great Recession, which we're supposedly coming out of?
Well, I think that the one thing I have to add is that the middle class is not only, say, an economic category, as John talked about, but it's also a cultural idea, and I think one of the things that people identify with that's a central part of American life and American cultural ideology is that the middle class is a cultural idea. So having a steady job, owning a home, being able to purchase a car, being able to send your children to college, many of the things that Anthony talks about are viewed as markers not only of being a member of the middle class, but also part of the American dream, as it's been defined. So when you have those things, you've made it, so to speak, mm-hmm. in an economic and social sense. So you're a member of respectable society.
Okay, so what's been happening to our middle class in the last decade or so?
Well, their economic fortunes have been eaten away fairly steadily and slowly, and the recession simply brought a lot of these things to the forefront. So what we argue in our book is that stagnating purchasing power by the middle class was actually replaced by the easy availability of debt. So just as wages seem to not be growing anymore, all of a sudden you could get a credit card sent to you through the mail. You could lease a car rather than buy one. You could buy a house with no money down with a teaser mortgage rate and 5 payment options. There were all sorts of ways of borrowing money to continue to consume, but that was all in the context of people whose incomes weren't growing.
And so this is what you refer to in your book as an illusion of middle class?
Yes, that's sort of – so you could purchase the accoutrements of being middle class and appear to be middle class, and yet if you looked at your your finances would be very close to being a disaster, and you're one or two paychecks away from – missed paychecks away from being in serious trouble.
Okay, so debt has increased in this country to what extent? Do you have any numbers on that? We're indebted more than previous generations by how much?
Well, prior to the recession, the last 2 years before the recession, Americans were spending more money in the aggregate than they were bringing in. So our savings rate was actually negative, mm-hmm. which is a sign that debt was increasing. The number of people who had second mortgages on their house and who were attempting to cash money out of their – cash equity out of their house was at record levels. Credit card debt per household was at record levels. The number of college students with significant credit card debt was at record levels. And the recession sort of brought a lot of that to a halt in part because lending stopped. So – and people couldn't continue to borrow money. So there are lots of people, students and others, who now owe a lot of money, homeowners whose houses are underwater, and people who own homes who are own cars who owe more on their car than the car would be worth if they traded in. So they're literally stuck.
Kevin Light is with us talking about the middle class. We want you to join our conversation. Have you fallen out of the middle class? Are you struggling to stay in it? What changes have you experienced in your middle class existence? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. An email from Bill asks us to explain the listeners exactly or generally how the widely accepted liberal view that increasing taxes on the rich will improve conditions for the middle class. He says it seems to be accepted as fact, but have never heard a plausible explanation of how that would work, which gets us to the point, Kevin Light, to put to you. How do you see the concept of middle class being used in our politics? Because it's talked about in both of our major parties.
Yes, it's getting a lot. It's getting a lot of press lately, and as I described it a few minutes ago when we were off the air, it's the Rorschach blot of Washington, D.C. The middle class are whomever the politician projects as being a member of the middle class, and if you actually ask some of our politicians who is middle class, you get widely varying answers. You have senators and congressmen who can't tell you what the median income for a family of four is within $50,000 or $100,000, who represent gated communities in certain parts of the country with 6,000 square foot houses and say, well, all of my constituents are middle class. Mm-hmm. It's been used a lot, but it's sort of – the term middle class is sort of used as a weapon. Sort of like you want to be representing the middle class. You certainly don't want to be against the middle class.
Mm-hmm. It's commonly accepted, a bipartisan view that having a large, healthy middle class is a good thing.
I think so.
Yeah.
What differs is how one goes about getting there. So getting to Bill's email, for example. There aren't too many economists around who think that investment income should be taxed at a lower rate than earned income is, and yet that's what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, we tax capital gains and investment income at about half the rate that we tax earned income at. So what has happened is people who have economic means and political power shift their income toward unearned income and away from earned income, which hurts the middle class, where most people make the income that they have from earnings from a job.
Mm-hmm. We hear also in our political discussions opportunity used as a word, as a buzz word that we should strive to provide opportunity to achieve perhaps middle class socioeconomic status. But we don't owe it to people to – we just owe the opportunity as Americans, or am I getting that wrong?
I think the opportunity rhetoric and dynamic is a big part of this. But then you have to ask the question, well – opportunity doesn't exist in a vacuum. So saying you're providing people with opportunity is not a reason to do nothing. So if you think about the heyday of the American middle class, we created a middle class using the GI Bill and FHA housing loans. So we didn't create opportunity by saying when you came back from World War II as a soldier, go out and prosper. There was actually an entire sort of infrastructure that was holding you up a little bit, and you had to take advantage of that. So there was individual efficacy, but there was also support.
Okay. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Kevin Light is with us, professor and chair of the Department of Sociology. Let's go to Ryan in Iowa City. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Go ahead. What do you have to chip in?
Well, I just wanted to say that, from a certain understanding of class, the vast majority of us are in fact working class, since we do not actually manage or control the means of production. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
So you want us to define better the working class as opposed to the middle class?
Exactly.
Okay, let's do that. Kevin Light.
Oh, well, working – Ryan's perception is good, and I think John Gallo's definition of the middle class and to some extent my definition of the middle class overlaps a lot with Ryan's definition of the working class in the sense that these are people who don't, as Ryan said, own the means of production, that their major source of income is earnings from a job, and whatever it is they actually own is not really a source that's going to generate income for them, at least not in the short term. But working class in the United States has traditionally had a negative connotation, going all the way back to the 1930s when it was identified with the union movement, the socialist movement, the communist movement. So a lot of people who are in fact working class don't identify as working class. And since the manufacturing sector has gone downhill, that identification has fallen out of favor. But that doesn't change who they actually are or what their source of income is.
Jacqueline from Johnson County is with us as well, 65 years old. Used to consider her in the late 90s herself and her husband as part of the middle class in the late 1990s. And then due to some primarily some medical problems, fell out of the middle class, is struggling to keep up now. Jacqueline, I'm wondering if we can go back to you at this point and ask the types of reactions that you've gotten to people, perhaps friends, family, or acquaintances, people you work with, when you've told your story.
I think I have a blessing of being able to be relatively open and articulate about what's happened. So I haven't gotten a lot of really any negative kind of reactions. People at least show that they have some empathy and understanding about how that thing kind of thing can happen. And I've gotten predominantly those kinds of feedback.
At the age of 65, you said you're back in school, hoping to better your situation. We hear in the media a lot, rhetoric about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Do you encounter that at all?
I encounter that sometimes, and I am very verbal about the fact, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps is a really great idea if you have boots. But many people don't have boots, much less straps.
What do you mean by boots and straps?
Many people don't have the opportunity to find a job, or the jobs that they can find are at, the Mart of Wall or McDonald's, paying minimum wage, not working anywhere near full time. You can't live on that. But if you've got that and you go to get social services, many times that keeps you out of getting social services. So your family's still hungry. You're still fighting to find or keep a place to live. You're still trying to put clothes on your kids' backs, but you're working.
Mm-hmm. How has this experience changed you, Jacqueline?
It has made me realize something that I knew, even when I considered myself upper middle class, is that there are a huge group of people in our country that people like to not look at. They like to turn their heads away when they see them. Their clothes aren't clean, maybe. Maybe they smell funny. Maybe they're out on the street asking for donations. Maybe they're just driving old cars. Well, why don't you have something better? And if they say, because I can't get anything better, well, why not? You just don't want to work. You don't work hard enough. If you worked harder, you would be in a better place.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Light, comment on that view, the perception we have in our society that Jacqueline just articulated.
I think the perception that Jacqueline describes of being pulled up by your own bootstraps has become more strident and more vitriolic to some extent as it's become less and less possible to do. And the thing I like to say when I give presentations out in public is there's no way that 25 or 30 years ago, half the population all of a sudden just got lazy and decided not to improve themselves. So 10 years ago, everyone was working hard and being industrious. 10 years later, all of a sudden, millions of people are looking for a welfare handout. It's not a culturally plausible story. The other thing that I think people see when you hear pull yourself up by the bootstraps story is people's inherent fear that there's where the next shoe is going to drop. I will lose my job and I will be just like the people I now despise. And that's a big component of it as well.
Let's talk a little bit about what can be done. I started the program by hearing President Obama talk about the middle class in his State of the Union address last month, and talking about providing strengthening and providing ladders. Ladders into the middle class. Kevin Light, looking at this, studying this over many years, what can be done?
There are some things that I think can be done, and some of those things Iowa is starting to do. So we need to make college education more affordable for students who want who want to get a college education. We also need to improve the transition from school to work so that the non-college bound student actually is able to find a good job. And there's plenty of demand for skilled laborers out there. So plumbers, carpenters, electricians. If anything, there are shortages in those areas. In fact, if I were the god of higher education, I would actually make everyone in college actually be certified in a trade, not necessarily because they would use it, but so they would understand how important craft work is.
So the days when you can be part of the middle class by graduating from high school and say, I'm going to go out and look for a job and be an apprentice somewhere, that's less likely these days.
Yes, that doesn't happen very often. So, and the cases where it does happen, there's no systematic way to do it. You almost fall into something that is there by chance, or you know someone, mm-hmm. or one of your relatives is in the trade. But there's no systematic way to channel hundreds of thousands or millions of young people in that direction, and we need that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so does that mean strengthening our community colleges, our technical colleges?
Yes, strengthening technical and community colleges and keeping them affordable.
Mm-hmm. What do you hear out there that gives you hope about the future of strengthening the middle class?
It's easy to be pessimistic, but the one thing that gives me hope is I think the recession, the 2008 to 2010 recession, really made a lot of people, consumers and people of a variety of economic backgrounds, sort of reassess what we're doing and think about, you know, the lifestyles they were living and the types of jobs they could get, and really take a little bit more critical stance regarding what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so When I give presentations out in public, I'm surprised by how sympathetic people are from a wide variety of backgrounds. You know, you would think there'd be, you know, 50% of the people would just love what we're talking about and 50% would absolutely hate it. But there's actually quite a lot of sympathy for strengthening the middle class and doing some conscious things to do it.
Ralph in Grinnell tells us that he sells at the farmer's market there and has noticed that people aren't buying as much as farmers at the farmer's market because they can't afford to buy for the whole week in some cases. An email from Bill, he writes, there needs to be jobs for people with education that pay a reasonable wage. Now, this is a political battle of this year. President Obama just signing, I believe, last Friday, the increase in minimum wage for federal contractors. Do you see this theme, Kevin Light, carrying on, getting stronger, having some resonance in our economy among the people?
Yes, I think it's getting stronger. And the thing that's made it stronger, I think, is the thing that happened right after the recession, which was the total collapse of the labor market for young college graduates. So some 25% of those who earn a wage below the poverty line now have some college education.
And so we've heard again and again this story of a college graduate leaving college with a diploma, moving back into mom and dad's house.
Yes, yes. A horror story if there ever was one. And I've got two kids in college, so.
Okay. Anything else about what can be done? Specifically here in Iowa, we heard John Gallo talk about the situation in Iowa. Your comments about how our middle class is faring compared to the rest of the country, what can be done?
Well, I think I tend to agree with John that the middle class in Iowa is doing relatively good if you take into account Iowa as a whole. What is happening is that more people who are educated are moving to the urban parts of Iowa. And it's the urban parts of Iowa where opportunities are growing. As late as 10 years ago, I was actually an advocate for the state actually doing more things consciously to try to keep young people here. But I think the opportunities are growing and they're getting better. Mm-hmm. So, and there are a lot of people who are drawn to Iowa because the cost of living is relatively low and the public schools are relatively good. So you can live here and you can raise a family on the types of wages that people are paid. Mm-hmm. So I think relative to the rest of the country, we actually have it pretty good.
Jacqueline, to end with you, we started with you. You're struggling to make ends meet with your husband at the age of 65, going back to school. What's your vision for your future as we end this hour?
I think that it's possibly okay. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. I am having to do student loans, so I know that there's going to be a payback at the end. So I better have a good shot at being able to do this.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed an uptick in the economy since the Great Recession started?
Not for most of the people I know.
No.
In fact, there's still a lot of them that it's getting worse for. They're not staying even. Propane blew everybody that lives in the Johnson County area right out of the water.
And this is propane primarily affecting rural people who are probably lower down in the socioeconomic ladder, Kevin.
Yes, definitely. Rural areas are having a really hard time. And to bring economic development back there would require really fundamental changes that I'm not sure anyone is politically ready for.
Kevin Light, thank you very much, professor and chair of the Department of Sociology. Also, thanks to Jacqueline, who shared your story. Thank you very much for that. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. We had help from Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, it's a News Buzz edition. We'll hear about a band member from Iowa, a band that last week was on the Colbert Report and performed. That's tomorrow on a News Buzz edition.